The reading is Esther chapter 1 on page 551. This is what happened during the time of Xerxes. The Xerxes, who ruled over 127 provinces, stretching from India to Kush. At that time, King Xerxes reigned from his royal throne in the citadel of Susa. And in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his nobles and officials. The military leaders of Persia and Media, the princes and the nobles of the provinces were present. For a full 180 days, he displayed the vast wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and glory of his majesty. When these days were over, the king gave a banquet lasting 7 days in the enclosed garden of the king's palace, for all the people, from the least to the greatest, who were in the citadel of Susa. The garden had hangings of white and blue linen, fastened with cords of white linen and purple material to silver rings on marble pillars. There were couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and other costly stones. Wine was served in goblets of gold, each one different from the other, and the royal wine was abundant, in keeping with the king's liberality. By the king's command, each guest was allowed to drink in his own way, for the king instructed all the wine stewards to serve each man what he wished. Queen Vashti also gave a banquet for the women in the royal palace of King Xerxes. We just pray now, Lord, that you bless Adrian with your words and for giving us this talk, Lord, on Esther. Just be with him now in your name. Amen.
How's that for a glorious waste of money? 180 days feasting and drinking, followed by another 7 days for whoever. I tell you what, I'm glad he's not today's tax collector. Okay. Book of Esther. Xerxes was king between 486 and 465 BC. And the book describes events in Persia during the reign of King Ahasuerus, also known as Xerxes I. The book specifically goes between the years 483 and 473. And I have to tell you, it is much disputed amongst scholars who cannot decide whether it is fact or fiction. It's the only book in the Bible that fails to mention God, forgiveness, worship, or prayer. Although when the Jews fast, it does imply prayer. This book is the biblical justification for the Feast of Purim, which just happens to be a very noisy and raucous two-day feast, celebrated with much joy. That is not what King Xerxes was doing. However, just a little bit of background on that. Many of the Jews that were in his kingdom had been enslaved and taken as slaves under Cyrus II, but were now living and working in Persia as an ethnic minority. Now, this particular Xerxes was the conqueror of Egypt. He was a cruel, tyrannical ruler, and shall I say, given to certain vanities, as we will go through. As you heard from the reading, he ruled over 127 provinces. They stretch from India in the north to Kush, which is modern-day Ethiopia in Africa. His capital in Susa was where we now call southern Iran. He was wealthy, as chapter 1 tells us. If you go back to verses 7 to 10, it will show you a little bit of the king's character. I'm not saying he was a drunkard, but and the queen's given name was Amestris. Vashti was a title which was possibly translated as the best looking, most desirable, beloved first wife of. Now, while the king was doing his 180 days of drunken liberation, she was the other end of the palace, holding a banquet for all the women, mostly there who belonged to the men the other end, some friends of hers, acquaintances of hers, possibly some from the harem. It doesn't specify. But some of those there would have been the wives of the consorts, ambassadors, and commanders of the army. The point is that she would have known what was happening throughout the palace. She would have had her people with her ear to the ground telling her what the king was up to. And what she did was very risky, given the absolute power of the throne. And given the fact that he'd been drinking for 180 days, and eating, of course. So when he sent a demand to her to come and present herself in her crown and all her glory to the men he was entertaining, she told him to poke it, basically. She refused his demand to appear, and it sent shockwaves through the palace. Mainly because, with his reputation, how would the king respond? He was extremely angry. So, unusual for the day, but he went to his advisors and wanted to hear what action he could take. That would imply that she was a deal that had been done with another king somewhere for troops or whatever, or not to attack them, or so she could have been his prize for self-control. It doesn't say, but it's a possibility. He obviously had feelings for her, so he used his advisors and asked them what he should do, what was legal, what was right, what was the best way. Now, there is apparently no law, there was no law back in those days, that, because this had never happened before. No queen had ever stood up to the king and said, no, I'm not doing it. So nobody put a law in place to say this is what happens when that happens. So a guy called Manukan started on about the disrespect it would cause and the possible damage to the male status, leading to a possible revolt caused by the wives amongst the nobles. And he suggested a royal irrevocable decree, because if the king made a decree and stamped it, he could not change it once it became law. That was a law of Persia. What they suggested was that this royal irrevocable decree would ban the queen from the king's presence forever. That he would be able to choose another more worthy. Should that be more compliant? I don't know. To be queen. And that, this is a good rule, this, every man should be the ruler of his own house and should say whatever he pleased. Yeah, obviously a man who deals with servants, not with wives. So having written the irrevocable order and decided to search his empire for a beautiful virgin to replace his queen, he sends his emissaries out to find her. And we find a Jew called Mordecai, son of Jair, of the tribe of Benjamin. And he had adopted a cousin called Hadassah, which in Hebrew means myrtle. But being as she was living in Persia, she'd been given a Persian name, Esther, a star. Their family had been brought to Susa from Babylon, where they'd been first enslaved when the Babylonians conquered Judah. Later, when the Babylonians conquered, under Xerxes, I think that could have been his father, but whatever. Basically, the Persians conquered the Babylonians and took their slaves and brought them back to their capital, which is how she ended up in Susa. So under the decree for the new wife, Esther was brought into the palace, along with hundreds of other women. They were put under the care of Haggai, who was the king's eunuch, for 12 months, which is a period of preparation before being taken to the king. Now, during this time, Mordecai had become a palace official, sitting at the gates of the king. And it was in the gates that court cases and official business was conducted. This position enabled Mordecai to listen to all that was happening. So when Esther was taken to the king, he knew. The king was delighted with her, he knew. The king was so delighted with her, actually, when she went to him, that he placed a crown on her head and said, "This is the one," and threw a banquet in her honour and declared a public holiday. wasn't all ease and love and friendship and everything else. From the dethroning of one queen and the appointing of another, it took almost 4 years due to several battles with the Greeks. We also come to the point here where Haman, the Agagite, was got promoted. In fact, he got promoted so far up the ladder that he was second only to the king in decision making. I've got something else about him, but still. So anyway. While Mordecai was sitting in the king's gates, he overheard two of the king's eunuchs talking, and they were plotting against the king. You having trouble hearing me? Both of these eunuchs were guards to the royal bedroom. They were called Bigdana and Teresh. They plotted to assassinate the king. And Mordecai thought about it and then thought, no, I'll tell Esther, she can tell the king. And this is what happened. It was investigated, it was found true, and both the eunuchs were executed. But Mordecai was not honoured, although it was recorded in the palace records. And what is not recorded is why Haman hated Mordecai, who had made no secret of his origins as a Jew. Haman, likely a descendant of King Agag of the Amalekites, were long-term enemies of the Jews. So he probably took it personally. Mordecai would not show any respect, would not bow to him, would not stand up when he entered a room. And he got so wound up with Mordecai that he extended the hate to all Jews. This feeling would not have been helped by the palace officials asking Haman why Mordecai the Jew didn't show respect. So a man started looking for ways to make the Jews in the empire pay. So he went to the astronomers and he asked them to cast lots. Purim, or in the Persian Purim. It's like a dice and it's used to forecast the best day to take action on something. I know it's like a dice because they have actually found one from that period near where the old palace was. Anyway, this was April and they gave him a date, the 7th of March the following year, which would be the best date for him to do this. So Haman went to the king and said to him, there is a certain race of people who keep themselves to themselves. They have their own laws, refuse to obey the laws of the king, and it's not in your interest to let them live. If it please the king, issue a decree that they be destroyed, and I will give 10,000 large sacks of silver to the royal treasury. In Hebrew, that's 10,000 talents. Or if you want it in any other way, it's 375 tons in weight of silver, which is a lot of silver. Xerxes obviously agreed, possibly thought, where does he get that sort of money from, but didn't say anything. Gave Haman his ring, which was the royal seal, and enabled him to write and seal his own decree. So on April the 17th, the decree was signed and sent by royal courier throughout the empire, specifying all male, female and children be butchered on the 7th of March next year, and all their possessions were given to those who killed them. When Mordecai heard this, he tore his clothes and dressed in burlap, it says in there, sackcloth and ashes. And he went out wailing. But he only went to the palace gates because no one in those days was allowed in the palace in mourning. When Esther found out what he was doing, she sent him some clothes to wear, but he refused. Then she sent Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs who had been allocated to her and who she obviously trusted. So Mordecai told Hathach everything, including the amount of money involved. He gave him a copy of the decree and he asked him to direct Esther to go to the king to beg for mercy and to plead for her people. Esther sent Hathach back, saying, "Everyone knows that if anyone appears before the king and is in a court without having been sent for, will be killed unless the king holds out his golden scepter. The king has not called me for 30 days, she said. So Mordecai replied, and said, I am now in chapter 4. No, he didn't. But what he said was in chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. But I've got idea 13. He sent back his answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance from the Jews will arise from another place. A Jew in your father's family will perish. And who knows but you have come to royal position for such a time as this." Then Esther replied and said, and this is the nearest you get to talking to God in this book, "Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and he carried out all of Esther's instructions, which is just after the king said every man will be in charge of his own household and say what he likes. And Mordecai was actually related to Esther, so it was his household. So on the third day of the fast, Esther got dressed up, royal robes, makeup, everything to attract attention. And she went to see the king, and covered by the fasting prayer of those Susa Jews, she was encouraged to actually do it, knowing that if the king was in a bad mood, she'd add it. But Xerxes welcomed her, and he extended his gold scepter to her. So she touched it, which was a way of saying, can I speak? And he asked her what she wanted. Up to half his kingdom. So she asked him to accept an invitation to himself and to bring Haman to a banquet. So they went to the banquet, and while they were drinking, the king said to Esther, now tell me what you really want. What is your request? So I'm moving on half a chapter, verse 7 and 8, chapter 5. Esther replied, my petition and my request is this. If the king regards me with favour, if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfil my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet I will prepare for them. Then I will answer the king's question. King agreed. And if that's not he who is never written about in this book, putting his finger in the pie, I don't know what is. Anyway, they had a banquet. They had plenty to drink. The man was happy when he left the banquet. And as he left and walked out to go to his own house, Hushti's sitting at the gate, a Jew called Mordecai, who didn't get up, didn't bow, and didn't even look nervous. It spoiled his evening. But he went home to his friends and family and boasted about his wealth, his many children, the honours bestowed on him by his king, his promotion, the invite to a private dinner, and another one the following evening. And then, remembering what had happened on the way back, he said, it's all worth nothing when I see that Mordecai, the Jew, sitting in the gate. So his wife and his friends said to him, set up a sharpened pole, 75 feet tall, so everybody can see it. And in the morning, ask the king to impale Mordecai. And then you can go and enjoy your banquet with the king in the presence of the queen in the evening. It might be a good time to mention the fact that Esther, when she was first put forward as a potential queen, was told by Mordecai to not tell anybody that she was Jewish. So apart from those in Mordecai's household, not Xerxes, not Haggai, not Hatharach. In fact, nobody outside of Mordecai's family knew that she was a Jewess. So she's kind of involved in what Haman is trying to do. And again, a little stirring of the pot. That night the king had trouble sleeping, so he sent for the book of records of his reign to be read to him. Possibly better than counting sheep. But during the reading, the record of Mordecai and the attempted assassination came up. And the king said, what reward, what recognition did we give him? The attendant who was reading said, none. Then the king heard somebody in the outer court and said, who's out there? And they told him it was Haman. So he said, well, bring him in. And when he came in, the king said to him, what shall I do to honour a man who truly pleases me? This kind of threw a man off course because he was coming to say, I want to impale Mordecai, will you give me permission? So, being this self-centred character who only looks after himself, he thought about it for a moment and then he read a list out to the king of the things that he would really like to be honoured by. The king said, excellent. Go and do it for Mordecai. Don't leave anything out. So Haman had to comply. He had to look after Mordecai in the way that he wanted the king to look after him. And this all comes up in, where are we, chapter 6? When it's all over, it's gone midday. So a man eventually gets to go home. He tells his wife and all his friends what he's had to do. And his wife said, it's Mordecai, a Jew, who humiliates you. Your plan will never succeed. It will be fatal to continue oppressing him. And they're still talking when the king's eunuchs arrived to take him to the second banquet. I've left myself a little note here. Chapter 7, 1 to 5. So the king and the man went to dinner with Queen Esther, and as they were drinking wine on that second day, the king again asked, Queen Esther, what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be granted. And then she answered and said, if I have found favour with you, O king, and if it pleases your majesty, grant me my life. This is my petition. If you think about it, imagine how Xerxes felt when she said, give me my life. Because although he knew of the petition, he didn't know she was Jewess. And spare my people, this is my request. For I and my people have been sold for destruction and slaughter and annihilation. Now that is the sentence that Mordecai put in his decree, that they would all be destroyed, slaughtered, and annihilated. If we had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet, because no such distress would justify disturbing the king. And I guess he was pretty confused by the time he had finished explaining that to him. So he said, who is he? Where is this man who dares to do this? And Esther then tells him, it's Haman. also included a careful reference to the huge price that a man was paying for the decree, without actually saying it was him at the time. When she named Haman, who sort of went into shock and went very pale and as guilty as could look before the king's fury. The king was mad. Haman was caught off guard by the declaration. In fact, the king was so mad that he walked out into the garden to cool off. And Mordecai stayed and Haman stayed behind. And he was pleading for his life and he threw himself on the couch where she was sitting. Just as the king walked back in. Who promptly accused him of attempted rape. As the king spoke, one of his eunuchs covered Haman's face. And Harbona, who was another of the eunuchs, who probably a bodyguard of some sort, tells the king about the sharpened pole that Haman has put up, all 75 feet of it, especially for Mordecai. So the king decided that it would be used and Haman would be impaled on it. That same day, the king gave Haman's property to Esther. Mordecai was brought before the king. But before he did that, Esther told Xerxes who he was to her, their relationship, and the fact that she was directly affected by this decree. And when Mordecai came in, the king handed his ring to Mordecai and promoted him to Haman's position. And Esther gave her property from Haman to Mordecai as well. Then Mordecai had a new decree written, which basically, instead of ordering the slaughter of the Jews, ordered the Jews to protect themselves. So when March the 7th arrived and the Haman supporters all went raging round to try and kill the Jews, they met an armed force of slaves. And it didn't quite work out for them. And you can read chapter 9 if you want. It'll tell you how many died and where and what. Mordecai and Esther arranged for Purim as a festival, and it's the only festival not established by Moses in the Jewish calendar. Mordecai and Esther formalized an annual celebration for God's rescue of them to celebrate it over 2 days. First for prayer, the second for eating and drinking. But in the festival, the feasting, the happiness is the giving of gifts of food to each other and of presents to the poor. And always you will find that whenever anything is done in God's name, it involves presence to the poor, of one sort or another. Okay, thank you for your silence. If you read chapter 9, chapter 10 will tell you about Mordecai, but chapter 9 is basically about the Purim celebration. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Adrian. Perhaps that might encourage us to go home and